subscribe. You can see the reviews afterwards.
Peace.
Here we go.
Yo, we're back. The Culture and Cannabis Podcast. Yo, listen, guys, I made it back to Las Vegas.
Nice.
I didn't get the coronavirus. I went to Denver, to Reno, and now back to Las Vegas. I go to LA tomorrow, and then I go to San Diego, and then I'll be back here. So
you're looking very healthy.
I feel healthy. I feel great. I don't feel any differences at all. Anyone that's canceling anything for this coronavirus, you're crazy. Live your life. Life's too short to be worrying about something that you can't even fucking see. So, but listen, we have a incredible guest today. This is someone that you might not know, but you've probably bought weed from this guy. We have Ryan Baldus in the building. What's up, my man?
What's going on, you guys? Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. That's a hell of an introduction, brother. I hope I can live up to that.
Yeah.
But I'm Brian, Ryan Nicanasam. I like to buy large amounts of weed and sell it back to the good people.
Yeah, nice. and he's been doing that for some years now. So Ryan, you are the purchasing manager for not only all the dispensaries in Nevada, but also now the mints.
Yes, yeah, I'm the purchasing director for the dispensary and mint. I started with the dispensary and then worked up into the two. So really, I guess the bigger difference is working in a multi dispensary situation,
right,
with purchasing and be able to utilize that first with just three, which was like a whole lesson of my own, and then expanding to two more and trying to integrate that, just like a whole another animal. And I think for anybody who's been in this industry like you guys, any sector that you've gone into, you can honestly say that this has been nothing but school. If you haven't been going to college this whole time, especially since medical, you wasted all of your time. This is a learning session right here, that being this early. So every time we think like, oh, like there's a lot of like as soon as you feel like you're ready to start teaching your craft to others, mm-hmm, I believe that's the time when you've reached the epitome. And there's not a lot of, mm-hmm, us that are there yet. They just don't have enough time in it, you know?
Yeah.
Not enough time in it. But being the purchasing director has really let me see the entire industry from the inside out. And I just feel completely honored to be able to do it.
Yeah, you know, being a purchasing manager, obviously, you know, with a lot of power comes great responsibility. How do you feel like you balance that, right? I feel like, you know, if you're in the industry, you do hear these stories about some of these managers, some corruption going on, people getting paid off. I know that's not the story with you since I've done business with you, but you know, tell me a little bit about that, how that kind of works.
Sure, sure. I mean, I think with any position in this industry, you have a certain amount of push, a certain amount of power, and a certain amount of sway, influence, if you will. I always believe it's the integrity of the individual and everything will follow after that,
sure,
right? So if your purpose from the very beginning of what you're doing is set and you just use a consistent model there after that, you're set in gold, baby. All this stuff that we're talking about, like taking money for certain product, even though the product's not good, or using your influence for good or for bad, for not good. None of that'll happen if in your heart, right from the beginning, you decide, what am I here to do? Mm-hmm. What's the main goal of purchasing? Are we just creating a fun menu?
Mm-hmm.
Are we helping people? I think once you decide that, you just keep running forward with it, and you know, everything keeps coming down. I'm a full, nice, believer in consistency and in everything, even when there's times you're like, man, I'm working really hard, I'm not seeing a lot of return. You just keep the consistency and boom, the next day, just like us, you know, I got elevated and we now have five dispensaries. And of course that comes with more responsibility, but it can also come with more benefits on the side from your company due to that hard, consistent work. The guy who quits before it's too soon,
yeah,
or really doesn't take the full journey, they'll never really know until they see somebody else complete the journey, mm-hmm, and then it's too late.
Yeah, no, 100%. And so kind of going off that, right, the model that you've kind of built at the dispensaries and now Mint is having high volume, but really, you know, high volume, a very affordable cannabis.
Sure.
What was your like mission behind that? Like what was the reason why you started that? What made you think of that?
I think everybody needs to separate themselves in one way or another. Mm. And the dispensary in itself is a very customer-centric model.
Mm-hmm.
A gentleman that I work with, his name is William Smith. He kind of describes it the best, is we reverse engineer the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's whatever they want, that's what we're buying.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part is getting the data from them, getting them to tell us what they want. You can only really get that with historical data,
mm-hmm,
with pulling old sales and finding out where the trends are and literally just giving them that. We,
right,
spotted through reverse engineering the customers through data that they are looking for larger quantities of cannabis for a lower price, much like a grocery store. They would never go and take four eggs out of their carton. You know, they get the carton for the entire week. So we try to follow a pattern like that. And it really came through to the flower. And then we said, what if we do something similar into the categories of edibles, if we do something with, you know, all these different categories. And it really showed that people were preferring more of a bulk buy situation for their week rather than treating it like a singular item. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm just buying a pair of shoes or I'm buying a hat.
I don't want to come to the dispensary every day. I want to come once a week, right?
Correct. So yeah. We just try to follow that model and set ourselves aside from that. You know, there was a while ago, I want to say when we were switching from medical into recreational, the biggest piece of criticism that I got that I took to heart is everybody said, man, you, especially you, Ryan, coming from where you came from, you guys are giving up on the medical patients. You've given up. It's all about retail. It's all about recreation. You don't help many medical patients anymore. And if you look at it from one point of view, you can look at data and say clearly, yes, there are less medical patients coming in. Sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But then if you switch your way of thinking, it'll really answer why we would want to bulk sell to everybody and why would we want to get this many people and attract this many people's heart in the masses. So when we're talking about patients, personally, I've always felt we're all a patient of some sort. Mm-hmm. Some of us were willing to go get a card in order to say to the rest of society that we are that, to feel safe from jail. Whatever that time period deemed that you needed necessary for that card, some people say the card is just a discount card today. So when you look at cannabis and what it does for humans and what we're doing here, we're helping everybody. So by making 7-gram deals affordable for everybody, by making all of these different categories, concentrates, pre-rolls, whatever it may be, vapes, CBD, us being able to be these volume players and get enough of it into these people's hands, who's really the patient? You know, we had a medical line that was nobody, right? There was nobody in that line back in the day. And then we'd have a long retail line. And in that retail line, we had somebody who had just used the restroom because they had gotten sick from their treatments. Got back into a retail line. Another person had come in, you know, obviously much more healthy. You can't determine somebody's health based on just them walking, but definitely in the culture, backpack with a rig in it, stepped right into a medical line and was seen within 5 minutes. So that really made me step back and say, who's a patient? Are we as dispensaries triaging these people? No. In my opinion, all of us are patients. We shouldn't have to describe how bad or how not bad of a patient we're, how sick or now not sick I am. So realistically, when you look at it in that essence, who's seeing more patients? You know, in my opinion, our customers are patients. So I see as many of them as possible. If you have the card that says you can have a higher limit or that you don't have to pay a particular tax because the state has said that you are in that category, we honor that. And we have a medical line and we follow suit with all the other dispensaries. But from the heart, all of our customers are our patients.
Wow, and that, you know, that's a really good, you know, like positive way to look at it, you know what I'm saying? With that being said, I'm happy that you brought up the, you know, the medical patients. You know, you're right. The, and I feel like it's not just you, but the whole industry has lost that. And it's not that it's your fault, but that's just the way the business is set up. The state had set it up so that there's no incentive for dispensaries or cultivations or production licenses to be producing for medical programs. So it's not your fault. It's the fact that the state didn't set it up that way. With that being said, how do you feel about the medical program where it is today? And do you think it's going to get better, going to get worse?
So I don't think the medical program should really be determined by the state, right? The state is regulating a lot of other aspects of it, but as far as knowledge behind this plant and how to properly deliver it, they're not really behind that. That's really in our hands as dispensary operators, in my opinion. What that means is rather than having a complete system or even some products that honestly, as a buyer, I'll let everybody know, it's difficult to sell a medical only product because there's not that many patients coming in for it. So rather than try to fight that angle, I would rather have a bud tender that is elevated in position, specifically trained in order to handle these. So we have an area where people can get the correct information when they are a medical patient, rather than trying to fight for a particular milligram that they would need more of. Because I can get them 500 milligrams, and I believe we would be more than happy to discount it to what a 500 milligram item would be. And we'll get them the same milligrams just as a retail patient, if needed to be. So in my opinion, we should provide a service specific to medical rather than a system specific to medical.
That's great. And you had touched too when you were talking about your past, and I've seen some stuff on your Instagram talking about, you know, you coming from the black market into the recreational market, or medical market and then recreational market. Can you tell us like what that was like, you know, going from being someone that was helping people illegally and now helping someone legally, and that like kind of that crossover?
I had to keep it in my own mind that my heart was still for medical patients because of this very transition. It's 10 years ago when we were in dispensaries, everybody was a patient. Mm-hmm. Everybody was a stage three something, a wheelchair, a handicap. We could have done 10 handicap spots and still not had enough. Because the only people back then that had a card that could come and see one of these gray area dispensaries, it was hard to get. It was $600 at the end of everything. You had to know a doctor. They didn't have weed doctors. Your personal doctor had to have this long relationship with you and say, you know what, I'm willing to give my license up or to risk my license to get you cannabis because we're there right now. So those were the only people that had access to these cards. So in the gray days, all we saw was very serious, very, very sick people who were looking for last chance help. There was no fun dabs. There wasn't a lot of infuse pre-rolls and having fun with the culture alongside of it. Everybody was so sick. And then we transitioned out. We all got raided and it went right back to the underground. And it seemed like the medical culture meshed back with the original cannabis culture. Sneak a tokes and, you know, hiding in corners, and everybody smokes together no matter who you are because we're all doing the wrong thing together. Mm-hmm. That started to come back. And then here we are today. The dispensaries came about, and it really started off as medical, but we saw a lot more people, like more like culture and medical coming through the doors. People that were really looking for a last chance option and they had their card, or people that were so into the culture that they were able to get their card, that they were, you know, use their headaches or whatever it may be to classify them as a patient and got their cards as well. So we had a blend of both of them. Mm-hmm. And then that day happened. We went recreational and it turned into everybody was able to come into the door. And that's, I think, where me personally, I had to find it in my heart to say, no, we are helping patients. These are all patients. We need to stop triaging these people in the door. That's not for us to do. I'm here to get you whatever you need to help you feel better. Not tell you, you know, you're sicker than this person over here, so I'll see them first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it goes deeper. That's a beautiful way to look at it, too. And we talk about that, too, right? Like, everybody's kind of a patient, and we all kind of use it for our own, you know. But, I mean, and then there's all kinds of things that are just kind of, like, out of your control, because I think it's more than just how sick you are. I think when it comes to the patients and people being disgruntled, you know, just the price in general, right, is forgetting about the patients, you know. And, you know, no really one person is in charge of that, right? So it's like, you know, it's great, you know, that you kind of have that approach to it, you know.
Even back, you know, referencing back to the old, like where we came from, we weren't able to offer these kind of deals and things back then. It was what we were doing on the streets beforehand, bag for bag, buying as much as we could. Some of it was super expensive, and passing the price for as much profit on top as we could get. It was no deal structure. We weren't thinking in these key finite points of what does our customer want and how do we get the most of them, utilizing the products available on the market. That wasn't an option for us. 10 years ago, for instance, the wax that we got in, it was some of the first ever on the market. BHO, nobody had ever really heard about it. It was just coming out of the black market.
When was this? What year?
10 years, it was probably 2012.
Nice.
Okay. Maybe somewhere around there. And none of this stuff was even about. So being able to use what we have today, almost looking back at where we came from, the culture, I believe that's what gives us the heart to drive into what we're doing today. No matter what happened back there, no matter how low scale, if you got raided, if you didn't get raided, it's about the same idea as before, is we're getting this into the people's hands because they should have had it this whole entire time. And I see it now as we're blessed to be able to help this many people. Mm-hmm.
No, that's great. And I think going into the fact that you are able to serve so many people by the fact that you do buy so much is awesome, and then, you know, make it really affordable. Do you think that model is the best model for a dispensary, or do you think that's just the model that you went with?
That's the model that we went with.
Yeah.
I think that's the best model for us. at the corporate office, at our executive team, we formed from the very beginning. We really stayed together throughout it. So we were able to develop a personality from the top down. And being a local shop that really runs that was the model that fit perfectly for us. I think there's other dispensaries and other locations that could take a different bite of the market and taking a different route of it. You know, there's always going to be the super high-end guys, the Gucci store. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be the tourist destination that you have to see. And then there's going to be the local boys, you know, mm-hmm. the guys who are just there consistently year after year. You come back to Vegas 15 years later from your vacation, you're like, you remember that one place? Yeah, it's still there. That's the really the vibe that we went for, and we just stayed consistent for it. So to answer your question, I think that works best for us. That's how we've seen to see the most amount of people.
And as you know, as someone that does have a lot of experience in the cannabis industry, do you think that you would ever want to try a different model? Like maybe, let's say another buyout happens and then you end up going to a different company. Would you ever want to do like a fun or the expensive model, or do you still always want to be like the local model?
So I would do both. If they wanted, for instance, if I went to another place and they wanted to go high end, we want super, super high end. Realistically speaking, there's not a lot of business there. It's super hard to do. I would always convince anybody to maintain your volume, get your revenue necessary in the door. Usually that is going to be with a volume play. Mm-hmm. And then just do opposite of what we've done. Expand the hell out of your top line. So you're bringing your customers in for that deal, but you're training your tenders or your staff to go up to these diamond tiers, this list, and then your whole marketing would be probably ployed behind getting high-end items into people. But just selling pure high-end is very, very hard to do. Very hard to do.
And so I guess it kind of plays into, I wanted to bring up like your Instagram name. So you're the Cannasom on Instagram.
Sure.
I believe that you probably have tried tons of cannabis, maybe more than anyone else in the state. Do you believe that you are the Cannasom?
I don't believe I am the Cannasom. I believe there's a lot of Soms out there.
Yeah.
The Cannasom was the only one not taken on Instagram.
Okay.
I was almost going to go with the Cannasom, but I was like, nah, don't do it. But so the name Cannasom came because I used to work at a restaurant on the Strip doing Pan-Asian fine bistro dining. Mm-hmm. And we had to take wine classes once or twice a week, consistently wine classes. And I could always relate because I was growing. So I could always relate to soil methods and certain things. So everybody's always like, man, this guy's the Cannasom. Like he's in these classes for wine, but he's all about cannabis. So they just kind of like nicknamed me the Cannasom a little bit, the Cannasom. It just followed with me up and until this, you know, this stage. But realistically, if you think about what that aspect is of wine, it's more than just tasting the wine. It's understanding the environment. It's understanding the regions, the business itself, and the yearly trends. Mm-hmm. So in cannabis, it's more, you know, it is, you do have to try a lot, but you can peel a lot back from a cultivation's visit. So you can tell what their plant's gonna be or what you're gonna taste going up until week 6-7. Then you can check their post-harvest and you can see what they're doing post-harvest and give a pretty darn good guess at what that product's gonna be at the end, and vice versa. You should be able to get a product and almost reverse engineer that, be able to peel apart maybe some small defects that happen during the grow. Something may have freaked out, there's some external ovulas or things like that. Maybe it happened in cure. Bud structure, everything's perfect, but the smell went a little bit, some Bovita packs all over the place. Commercial is super hard, dry regions to get that cure right on the money. Only a few guys are doing it. So you can kind of peel it back either way, but it's about understanding the business, the culture, and the temperature of what's happening right now, because this is a very momentary business as it is right now. It's a very momentary thing that as a buyer, you have to ride with the flows as they go. You can't have an opinion of your own. It's the opinion of the customers.
Yeah, and I guess going off that, you know, if you could, as a buyer of a cannabis dispensary, could give any advice to any consumer, what would it be when going to buy cannabis of any product, whether that be flower, concentrates, edibles, CBDs?
I always say, research everything as you would research anything. So for instance, when I go to buy something, I have to look at a lot of different sources. I'll look at, you know, Reddit, a few online forums to find out what this product's about and what a lot of other people say, cross-reference and find a best solution to that. So when purchasing cannabis, I always say try to educate yourself as much as possible. It's not a pair of shoes that's stomping on the ground. It's something you put in your body. So as much as you would research maybe a tablet or a vitamin that you would take on a normal basis, I would do the same for cannabis. But also really try and find the companies that you like that match what you're looking for would be one of the best. So if there's a company that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and all of these dietary needs that I might have, I will most likely want to get to that company and stick with them just out of pure consistency. Yeah. So research the companies, but moreover, know about what you're buying. Know yourself about what you're doing. And never trust anybody to teach you about what you're putting into your body. Research yourself and then come talk to the tenders and use it as a cross-reference. But if it's not up here on your own, it's you're never going to get it right.
And I guess you brought up a good point too about, you know, we believe too that doing research is definitely the best way to learn about cannabis. With that being said though, the bud tenders do have a big obligation as being the people that are, you know, in front of these people recommending, you know, whether they should be taking an edible or smoking weed. How do you guys at the dispensary train your bud tenders for that?
Love that. So first of all, I couldn't agree more. The tenders are absolutely responsible for giving the information to these customers. And it's the assumption that nobody's going to research a thing. This is why we actually take an education program the way that we do at the dispensary. One way is we serve a lot of papers throughout the week on new products that drop. And what it is like, for instance, we have an allergy list on every edible. So our tenders can go through and find this edible is allergy for peanuts, this, and this. So little things like that we do in momentary instances that they can use over and over again. Mm-hmm. We also do weekly, almost like an episode of your favorite show. They're about 20-minute segments. We film with the vendor's back house. Mm. So we ask the techs, we ask the producers, the cultivators themselves to come on set, and we give information to the tenders in depth. That in-depth information I personally turn into sales lines, things that make more sense to a customer. So when you talk about the different levels of distillation, white film of, for say, a CO2 pen that has been separated, distillate, and then put the terpenes back, you've lost the customer just saying that stuff.
Yeah.
This is a triple distilled terpene heavy pen. This is the language to use with learning all of what that process was. So we take the cultivators, producers, give the information to our tenders on a weekly basis via like a show, almost like a podcast like this.
Nice.
And at the end of the podcast, there's a quiz that is attached to it based on the information from the video. And when they take this quiz, they get a certificate that they can put into their file.
Nice. That's awesome. So is that, you have a lot of good reception with that, with the bud tenders?
Like, it's the best.
They all love it?
It's the absolute best because it's directly to them, all five stores at the same time. So everybody is getting the exact same message. So one store isn't saying that this is a live resin when this store is saying it is not. Mm-hmm. The same message is paramount when it comes to retail and multiple stores.
That's awesome. And so I guess, so even going back to when you're going behind the scenes to shoot these videos, are you ever like catching somebody in an act or seeing something that you're like, oh, wait, I don't think you should be doing that?
No, usually the questions that I provide ahead of time, they're to drive the process behind what they're doing.
Okay.
You know, it's not so much to indulge in their back of houses.
Yeah.
So for instance, if we have a chocolate provider coming by, I'm gonna ask questions about their homogenization. I'm gonna ask some questions about what kind of distillate they like to use. If they're CO2, if they like a THC distillate, why? What their thoughts on terpene infusion and how they avoid LOQs, how they can actually show them on tests, just things like that to show why they would use this product over another. But I wouldn't, you know, for extraction guys, for instance, getting into filter methods and things like that, sometimes they like to keep that proprietary, so we don't even indulge into a lot of that. It'll be more about, we'll bring on a cold concentrate provider, go through the different levels of concentrate that we have here, the different consistencies. What do you classify as shatter? What do you guys do for cryo? Can you give me a couple of standards for your cryo? Yeah, we like to freeze everything and put it into the freezer within 10 seconds, which is very unique of everybody else. Our tenders can actually use it when they talk about these concentrates. It tastes so good. The terpenes are preserved because they do a very, very fast flash freeze, anything like that.
Nice. Yeah, and then going back to, like, you had brought up like the like filtration, or like, you know, the, obviously like everything has to be tested being in a dispensary. So everything is quote unquote safe for the most part. But as in recent news, you have seen that certain labs have been popping up for certain things of potentially taking brides or bribes,
getting, you know, little love from the labs. You know,
yeah, so. Yeah, or the fact that there's flour that's getting through to a dispensary that either has like mold or aspergillus or any one of those things. Mm-hmm. How does that happen?
I'm gonna do my best to not doomsday this one.
Okay. Right?
So, just to start with it, any buyer that isn't continually visiting your best partners at least on a quarterly basis needs to start. That needs to continually happen. Staff changes, things happen, weather changes. You need to stay on top of what's happening in every one of these cultivations and productions. So visiting, touring. Get yourself a team if you need help. But whatever you do, you have to stay in it at all times. So if you know what you're looking for, some will start with cultivation because that's usually where some of the problems will start, and then it'll spread to distillate, to edibles, and that's where you can go in and really poke around and see, for instance, the size of the cultivation. It's better if their intent is for a distillate to use a filtration or a cleansing method on the buds afterwards. It behooves them to do so. If it is a small boutique grow who prides on frozen material for its terpenes, they can't be anywhere near it. They have to be as foundational as possible. They have to stay to the bare roots of growing and what this plant's about, right? And that stays far away from any kind of cleansing methods or filtration. Mm-hmm. So it's about the purpose and going to these cultivations and seeing what's back there. Mm-hmm. Seeing, last time I went there, I did notice some of this, this, and this, but I did talk to the grower and they mentioned they're doing this and this. Mm-hmm. That should take care of the problem, right?
Yeah.
Now, is that 100%? No. Absolutely not. It seems that you can go into a grow, they are clean, everything is beautiful, you have a clean test from one lab, and then you get a notice in the mail saying that this cultivation has failed for what you already have as passed. That can still happen. Mm-hmm. So that's where I try to stay away from the doomsday about the situation. Like, there's nothing you can do. There is. As long as you're continually going in, recertifying, and checking cultivation and production for what your particular standards are for the menus, you should be able to at least stay as far away from a lot of that as possible.
Yeah.
It's not true. It's not a hardy plan, but that's the best that I feel that I can do as a buyer in order to.
And that's never happened at any of your guys' stores before, where they've hit you up about like plant, like maybe you got a couple pounds that might have not passed, but passed that one lab.
I think everybody has at some point.
Yeah.
I'd have to check. If anything, I think there may have been a distillate that we were going to use and weren't able to, or something like that. But if I have to think about it correctly, I want to say there isn't too many people who haven't at one point been affected by it, either from the plant itself or a product that was made of a product that was made of a product that ended up in your place.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And I guess that goes back to, you know, no one's safe from it. Everyone has to do their due diligence, but we're all trying our best.
Due diligence. That's the best you can do to keep away from that. There's nothing we can do in throwing your hands up.
Yeah.
Due diligence.
And not have a doomsday moment. Yeah. Like right now we're having with this coronavirus.
It's getting pretty gloomy out there.
It is. And it's gloomy outside today, dude.
The weather is gloomy.
I don't know. It was all crazy. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We really, really appreciate it. Do you want to, let's plug you right now so you can find you at The Canisom.
Yep, at The Canisom on Instagram. That's pretty much where I live.
And then The Dispensary and Mint, so you can find
absolutely thedispensaryNV.com. You can go to Mint and find them online as well at mint.com. They have Instagrams, The Dispensary Henderson, The Dispensary LNV, Mint, and you can also find all of our partners as far as cannabis products with Cannapunch, Highly Edible as well, Nordic Goddess, Tumbleweed. We have Kind and Kanji products as well.
Nice.
Wow.
And more to come, and probably a few that I missed.
Nice. Nice. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
JC.
What's good, my man? What's good?
Well, I just came back from the city named Reno, Nevada. Ryan knows it. Ryan's been there a couple times.
Biggest little city on earth.
Biggest little city in the world, aka Reno as fuck.
Yeah.
So listen, we're going to be doing a show up there.
We are. A big show.
A big show. Who are we having?
Mike Jones.
Who?
Mike Jones.
Who?
Mike Jones, baby. So April 18th.
420 weekend.
420
weekend. 420
weekend. We bought flights yesterday.
We did buy flights.
We got the Airbnb booked.
Because of the coronavirus, my flight was $75.
Yeah, it was unbelievably cheap to fly to Reno right now. If you want to buy some flights, this is the time to do it.
It is.
But April 18th, Mike Jones at the Bluebird. It's going to be insane, JC.
It is going to be insane. We're going to do a meet and greet at Bloom Reno. We're going to have our signature doorbuster event specials. It's going to be insane.
It's going to be insane. Yeah, so check it out. That's going to be on 418 at Bluebird. We're going to do a meet and greet from 3 to 5 at Bloom Reno. And then after, from the show from 8 to 12, we'll have some great local support. Mo Ayala from 102.9. Wild 102.9.
Yeah. DJ Mo. It's going to be
DJ Mo is going to be live hosting, DJing. So it should be a good time. And then, guys, listen. I'm not going to drop the details yet, but May 30th, Las Vegas, Nevada, at where do we have it?
It's going to be at Place on 7.
Place on 7.
It is going to be the biggest culture and cannabis event
we've ever done.
That's ever taken place. It's going to happen in two buildings.
It's going to be fucking nuts.
And like in a big alleyway. It's going to be crazy.
And don't forget, we also sell these things that he buys called weed. So pick up some of our products. We got our pre-rolls in a couple different stores right now. There are a couple new stores coming online.
So we're in Bloom Reno. We're coming in. We're going to be in next week, Bloom DI.
Bloom DI, yes.
Acres. Formerly Acres. Now it's Curaleaf.
Oh, they're both Curaleaf now.
Yeah, both Curaleaf.
So Curaleaf.
And Sahara Wellness. And so we're in a health. Sahara Wellness. Starting next week.
Shout out to Brenda.
Shout out to Brenda. Yeah.
And that's it, folks. That's the show. If you don't follow me on Instagram, you can follow me at Fulltime Tony.
You probably already follow me.
Shut up. Shut up. I'll be continuing my trip. I go to LA tomorrow. So if any of you viewers are in LA, hit me up. I'll also be in San Diego Monday through Friday. So if anyone wants to hit me up and link up and smoke and say fuck you to this coronavirus, let's do it together. And that's it. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Culture and Cannabis Podcast. We'll see you guys next Thursday.
Peace.